some truths around Bitcoin. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And today I'm joined by Alex from Nuggets News. Hi, how are you going?
Good, thanks, Martin. Thanks for having me on. I know you've given our audience a lot of value, so hopefully I can return the favour today.
Well, I think it's a really good time to have you on the channel because there's a lot going on in the world of crypto and Bitcoin and Libra and those sorts of things. And, you know, it's interesting if you look at the comments on the DFA channel, there are people who are very positive around Bitcoin particularly. There are those who actually are a little bit more negative and those who actually think that gold is the answer. So I thought it'd be good to have a bit of an in-depth conversation around Bitcoin specifically, but then perhaps take the conversation a bit more broad than that and talk about some of the other developments, not least, of course, because Bitcoin has been extremely volatile in recent times. And after being in the doldrums for quite a few months, it's been up a bit and it's down a bit and up a bit, down a bit. So quite interesting just watching the latest moves there. So let me just sort of start with the basics, right? Because there may well be people who still haven't really got their head around blockchains and bitcoins and how the two hang together. So can we start there? Let's describe what Bitcoin is and how that relates to blockchain.
Yeah, I mean, before I even get into that, Martin, I might say that I actually am a pretty big fan of gold as well. And there's a lot of sort of criticism that is warranted out there. So yeah, getting into the technology itself, blockchain is a distributed, decentralized ledger, a new way for people to share information and share value in Bitcoin's case. So Bitcoin is by far the best cryptocurrency and the oldest out there. And the blockchain technology that it uses, that decentralized database, is just one piece of the technology that makes it so brilliant. So now we have a lot of other projects, and they all fall under this name of cryptocurrency, which is a bit misleading because a lot of them aren't trying to be currency at all. There's a lot of different projects in different industries that are just using blockchain technology to help them, which I think we'll probably get into later.
Yeah, okay. And just to be clear, you know, the blockchain can be used in lots of different ways for lots of different things. As you say, apart from currencies, you know, it can be used for secured document transmission and all sorts of other things. And I'm sure that there will be many, many millions of usages of this idea of a distributed ledger. So effectively, there is no one single source of truth. There's no one controlling necessarily. But because effectively it's mirrored in many, many places, that in itself provides a degree of security and coherence about the data. I mean, that's the fundamental blockchain point. And so then if you overlay the Bitcoin concept, that is where you start moving then into a cryptocurrency. So there is actually some sort of value attached to those messages that are sitting in these blockchain ledgers around the place. And that's where we start then getting into the concept of value sitting within Bitcoin. So can we start with a little bit of history? You know, Bitcoin has been around for a few years. Got a fair amount of momentum at the moment, given what's going on. So, you know, how have we got to where we've got to so far?
So the creator was anonymous. We're not sure who that is yet. There's a few candidates out there that are a bit controversial and whatnot. But basically, Bitcoin sprung up out of the ashes of the GFC, and it brought together all these different principles. One of them was blockchain, for a way to build a monetary system where you don't need to trust one party. At the moment, we have to put all our faith in a central bank or a government, and that hasn't ended up so well on a lot of occasions. So now with this new system, everyone can run and support the network, and there's no one person that controls it. That also makes it extremely secure because you've got 10,000 nodes around the world at the moment that are running the network. So you're never going to hack all of those at once. And what that allows is for peer-to-peer payments, as you say. So for me to pay you directly, and it's this open source software, the nature of Bitcoin, that cuts out the middleman. And we can apply that model to a lot of other industries later. But that's why it cuts a lot of the unnecessary expenses out. And people know that the banking system, and probably your audience more than most, about how it can kind of be rent seeking or even parasitic. Some people like to say that banks just charges fees on everything. So now if we can cut out the middleman and pay anyone around the globe, this is why the system is becoming so widely used.
Right, and it's got a sort of a quasi-gold quality to it in terms of there's a limited supply of bitcoins, right? That was sort of part of the original conceptual design, wasn't it? That allows for some control over value. And we've got these things called Bitcoin miners who are essentially using algorithms to create more bitcoins, but there's a limit to the total that can be created.
Yeah, so you've touched on a lot of points there. Mm. One of the problems they solved was the double spending problem. So with digital money, how do you know that I haven't sent it to two people at once? And all those computers around the world, the miners, they compete to solve a hard algorithm and they get rewarded with a few bitcoins for that to ensure that you haven't double spent them, just as you can't, you know, duplicate a song or download a song and then share it to two other people. That was one of the problems that Bitcoin solved. Now, the other one was that finite amount, and the more Bitcoins that come into circulation, that amount halves every 4 years, which we are approaching again next year. So at the moment, the inflation rate is around 4% and it's going to drop to a bit under 2%, which is going to be very attractive when central banks are targeting that 2-3% inflation rate. So Bitcoin, I guess, as it grows, it's becoming more of a deflationary and scarce asset, and people are seeing that as a store of value, particularly in countries, Argentina, Venezuela, with runaway hyperinflation. When you know you have an asset that is finite, that's why people are flocking to it.
Right. So then, of course, you've got this issue of what's called forking. And, you know, there's a proliferation of, if you like, flavors of Bitcoin, as well as, of course, other cryptocurrencies too. So what's that all about?
So I definitely understand why people get worried saying there's thousands out there and, you know, that sort of dilutes it. And it's kind of true, but you can start Martin Coin and it doesn't mean it has any value at all. And that's what a lot of people have done. And they have got sort of falsely inflated market caps by the way it's calculated and the exchanges and whatnot. But it is a survival of the fittest. It's a free market. And that's the same with forking, where someone can say, well, I'm going to copy the Bitcoin code but include privacy, or I'm going to make it slightly faster and sort of have little tweaks, I guess, is the best way to describe it. Now, that's all well and good. You can do that, but that doesn't mean that your community and your coin and your network necessarily is going to be used or have value, but it creates competition. And if you're an owner of a Bitcoin, well, you get that copy coin as well in your wallet. So Bitcoin Cash is the one that most people know about. We've also got one called Bitcoin Private, for example. So you get all those coins. So it's almost like a stock split or a dividend where you actually accrue that value as well. But what it's done is people have realized, well, Bitcoin is the king. It is so valuable and it can. People are throwing a lot of competition at it and trying different things, but it is the ultimate sort of store of value.
Okay, and just touch on the forking a bit more. So this is where effectively different flavors, you know, add another different functionality. But is there still, if you like, Bitcoin the king and then everybody else sort of around the edge? Is that the way it's really working?
Yeah, so you can think of it as a software upgrade. And if 10% of the community don't agree that it needs to be upgraded, well, they can say, well, we're going to do a different upgrade, and then their version sort of forks off with that clone, and Bitcoin continues on its way, but you get that copied coin also in your wallet.
Okay, all right. Now, the other thing, of course, is that there's a difference between the online wallets and the local wallets, and, you know, where you store your Bitcoins. I think people perhaps are quite confused by that, and that would be quite helpful, Alex, to go into, because, of course, the point is that there is a question of, if you hold it online in one of these online vaults, how secure it is versus holding it locally.
Yeah, so this is a new concept for a lot of people, and most people buy their first Bitcoin from an exchange. In that circumstance, you're just logging into a website and they hold the Bitcoins for you in their wallets. But the correct way to store it and the idea behind Bitcoin is that you sort of become your own bank. So you have to have your own wallet. Now, some people want to have that on their home computer, but then if you get hacked or there's a virus or whatnot, that's where people get in trouble. The most secure way is a hardware wallet, which is like a little USB stick. And the information that stores your Bitcoins is on the actual device. So it can't be hacked. So that is the safest way, the best practice for people to store their Bitcoins. But these days, particularly Australian exchanges have never been hacked, touch wood, and they do use best security practices to store all their Bitcoins offline, not sort of on their website, so to speak. And then this is where the terminology comes into it. That's a cold wallet where it's offline. I might have a hot wallet on my mobile phone, for example. So if I'm going out, I'm going on holiday, I want to spend my Bitcoin to pay for things, as you would get money out of an ATM, you sort of have a little bit on hand in a more portable wallet.
Okay, now that's good. And I think that the concept of security is pretty important, right? Because there have been a few exchanges around the world which have been hacked. As you say, the Australian ones are pretty good. They use dual factor where they can and a bunch of other technologies to try and provide a level of security. But I guess the fundamental question, Alex, is how do you actually know what the value of a Bitcoin is, right? Because the market value has been up and down all over the place. And some would say, well, there's nothing underneath it, right? It's not pinned to anything. So, I mean, what's driving the value up? What's driving the value down? And why is it so volatile?
Yeah, again, I'm hoping your audience is a bit more open-minded to the fact that, well, what makes money valuable these days? Since we went off the gold standard, it's all just sort of faith in government. Now, in Australia or the US, that's working out reasonably well. You can rely on your currency being fairly stable year to year, even though the Aussie dollar's dropped maybe 40% in the past 10 years. But in Argentina, Venezuela, you know, maybe we're seeing Zimbabwe, maybe Italy next. One by one, we're sort of seeing these currencies that aren't being used responsibly, and there's fears of QE in the next downturn. So how much purchasing power is going to be eroded over time, even for the more stable currencies like the US dollar, is the question that people are asking. So then what backs Bitcoin? Well, it is firstly that it is scarce and it's finite, and we know that there's not going to be more printed like the US dollar or the Aussie dollar in future. Now, in other countries, they don't have a banking system. So the fact that they can even send payments to each other on smartphones then becomes valuable for them. In China, when there's capital controls where the banking system won't let you send money out of the country, well, now you can do that with Bitcoin. So that is valuable to them to some degree. The fact that we have the world's most secure computing network that's never had any downtime or never been hacked, you know, how valuable is that? If a company like Google were to try and build that, with all the miners around the world, how much would that cost? So Bitcoin is, I guess, different things to different people, a payment network, a store of value. And because it is the most secure computing network in the world, what we're seeing is other projects starting to piggyback off Bitcoin and sort of use its security to their advantage. So there's a lot of uses that haven't even been discovered yet for Bitcoin. And I think it's worked very well in a number of countries already to protect people from inflation or bank runs or bail-ins we're hearing about. If we go to the world of negative interest rates, people are going to want to park their money in gold or Bitcoin or something outside the system.
Okay. And, you know, the price of Bitcoin has shot up, it's dropped back now. I guess you'd say that's just par for the course, isn't it?
Yeah, so volatility is not one of its best properties if you want to be using it as a payment system or a store of value. Now, people say, well, Bitcoin dropped 85%, that's not a good store of value. But Bitcoin has actually gone up 124 out of 126 months of its existence. So 98% of the time, it has acted as a great store of value for people. Now, the reason I believe it is so volatile is because it's such a tiny market cap compared to the amount of money in the world or the amount of gold, all these other asset classes that people traditionally have used it as a store of value. And what we're seeing is Bitcoin starting to capture a percentage of that market share. And because it's so small and it's growing to this huge number, that means that there's early investors and speculators that have made a lot of profits. So they sell a little bit and they cash in, and we see people that get the FOMO and they pile in at the wrong time, and then we have these big corrections. But generally over time, I believe we are heading to a market cap well into the trillions, something like gold or maybe even more, we don't know yet. And that means that the market cap's going to continue to grow and probably continue to have these volatile cycles. And within the next couple of cycles, I believe it will settle down to the volatility might be 20 or 30% a year. And then it's not that much different to, you know, the US dollar, the Aussie dollar, the euro.
Right. So what you're really saying is this is part of a symptom of an early life cycle, right? And as it becomes more mature and more players, get in, the liquidity changes, then effectively the volatility is likely to become less of an issue ahead.
Yeah, so the current market cap of Bitcoin is around $200 billion. And when you consider how big some of the tech stocks are just in the US, there's still plenty of room to grow. And this is the first time we've ever had a truly global asset. So it's not just a US tech stock. This is people in Africa using it as a payment system, China, Australia, as well as all the speculation. And now we're seeing Wall Street get very interested. So eToro, Fidelity backed, there's a number of ETFs waiting to get approved. And remember, they're all chasing this scarce asset. And I think that it's going to continue to go up.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the central banks and the other financial regulators in a number of countries are still expressing concerns about the initial coin offerings of the other cryptos that are coming in. But there is also a very strong move now amongst some major financial players to become more actively involved in the development of Bitcoin. And as you say, there are a number of interesting developments. I think even as we speak, and this will create more liquidity, it will create more demand, and potentially perhaps provide more stability in the market ahead.
Yeah, so you touched on an important point about those ICOs and all the other cryptocurrencies. It did become a bit of a mania, very similar to the dot-com bubble. And just like the dot-com bubble, there were 99% of projects that ended up being worthless. And I very much agree with that. 99% of cryptocurrencies are going to be worthless. But from the ashes rose, Facebook, Google, YouTubes of the world. And I believe that we're going to see a very similar story. And Bitcoin is clearly the leader at this stage.
Okay, interesting. Now, let's just switch tracks a little bit, because, of course, Facebook announced a couple of months ago this new Libra, I think it's Libra, the way I pronounce it, which is effectively a cryptocurrency, but this is actually backed by a combination of other currencies. So it's actually backed by something rather than the Bitcoin, which is effectively, as we discussed earlier on, essentially just within the network. So what's your reaction to Libra, and how do you see that playing out vis-a-vis Bitcoin?
So because of the volatility, we do see a rise in popularity of stable coins. And traditionally, most of them have been pegged one for one to the US dollar or the Aussie dollar, something like that. So Libra have come out and proposed that, hey, Facebook's fairly global. We're going to have a basket of currencies very similar to the IMF's special drawing right. They're talking about the US dollar being the heaviest weighting in that. So it's meant to be ultimately more stable than any one currency. The fear is, and I watched all these hearings the other day with Congress and the Senate, that is going to take a lot of power and suck up a lot of money out of the system, particularly of developing nations. They've got 2 billion users, and if a lot of those start to put the money they have into Facebook's Libra instead of the banking system, well, that is a big issue. And if Libra are then parking that in a basket of currencies, maybe it will benefit the US dollar or the euro a little bit, but it's going to suck all that money out of those developing nations. And that's why we saw China straight away sort of push back. A lot of people aren't comfortable with basically a big tech company saying that, well, we're now considering ourselves an online nation or an online currency of the globe, more powerful than any one government or country. And that's why it's received a lot of pushback.
Right. And there is a confederation of interested parties, right, from PayPal and many other players who are involved in this. And some people are saying, well, this is in a way the empire striking back against the likes of Bitcoin, right? Because basically it's the major players who have muscle already, essentially muscling into another channel, as it were. And it's interesting that some of the financial sector regulators are actually talking more positively about Libra vis-a-vis Bitcoin. Some would say, well, they wouldn't they? Because, of course, what they're advocating is essentially an extension of existing currencies, the existing game effectively under a new banner. But it really is the old world effectively vis-a-vis Bitcoin, which is perhaps the new world.
Yeah, so Bitcoin is open source, as I described before. So you can download a wallet, you can download a node and help run and support the network. Anyone can participate and anyone can send money to anyone in the world. With Libra, it's going to be slightly different. So there's going to be a lot of KYC and registration, and I'm sure Facebook will ban people just like they ban users. Certain countries won't be allowed to use it. And so far, they have 32 corporations that have joined them. Visa, MasterCard, these huge corporations. So when they all get together, it is seriously a bit of a worry about what their intentions truly are with the way that they have used people's data in the past. And it's huge competition for the banks and the central banks. It's not really competition for truly decentralized currencies like Bitcoin that have all these properties that I think are beneficial. Facebook are just kind of saying, well, this is a new digital banking system, more akin to PayPal, I believe.
Yeah, okay, right. So people shouldn't see it just as a battle then between, Bitcoin and Libra. It's actually a philosophical difference, right, which is essentially how decentralized, how much control is involved, and, because of the fact that these large corporates are involved and the fact that the central banks are saying, well, we might get involved, there is a sense of greater control and greater direction vis-a-vis Bitcoin, which is much more decentralized.
Yeah, well, Facebook is one of the most valuable companies in the world, and it's free to use. So why, where's that value come from? And it is collecting all your data and selling that to third parties and selling ads to you and whatnot. So if they can track everything that you spend money on and your habits, then it becomes very valuable. That's why we're seeing all these corporations join up versus the open source nature of Bitcoin.
Okay. So ahead, what do you think the next iteration of innovation will be vis-a-vis Bitcoin? You know, things on the horizon?
Yeah, so Bitcoin is a bit like the internet in the early days at the moment, where it's a bit slow and a bit clunky to use in some ways. It's getting better and better every day. And one of the scaling solutions is called the Lightning Network, where you can send payments instantly and with far, far lower fees, you know, a hundredth of a cent, for example. So that's already out there. There's plenty of people using that already. But the other applications of blockchain are what excites me. And any industry that can benefit from decentralization and taking away that sort of that power structure. And a good example is maybe the power industry. In Australia, we have a project called Power Ledger. And they're trying to decentralize that energy grid. So every third or fourth home with solar panels would be powering the whole neighborhood. And you would buy your power off your neighbor at a far lower rate. They would sell it to you. And they have a number of trials in the US, throughout Asia, as well as in Australia. So when you think to yourself, hey, would that industry benefit from decentralization? Is there a middleman that's taking fees and making that more inefficient? And if the answer is yes, then these are the sort of projects that blockchain tends to benefit most.
Okay, so you've really talked about other applications of blockchain, and we said earlier on the massive innovation there. What about technology vis-a-vis Bitcoin specifically? Is it relatively stable now, or are we going to see more stuff there?
Some people want to push Bitcoin forward and really experiment, but part of its beauty is that it has been so stable. And I know it's only 10 years old, but in some way, in the cryptocurrency world, comparatively, it's almost making it like gold. And people say, oh, gold's thousands of years old and it's boring. Well, that's the beauty of gold, and that's why it has been so stable over time. Similar to Bitcoin, it is very much doing its job to protect people from the banking system as a store of wealth to date. So that's why we're experimenting with the second layer solutions. But there is a bit of a debate about whether we should make Bitcoin more private, because at the moment, if I know your address, Martin, after you've sent money to me, because it's an open public ledger, I can click on that and see how much money you have in there. So there's different ways that we can implement privacy to upgrade the network. In future, they might need to increase the block size to increase the number of transactions that it can do as more and more people use it. So there's lots of things that we can tweak, and Bitcoin is very patient to implement those because we don't want them to have any bugs. It's very important that we get this right the first time. I've never really met someone that has fully understood Bitcoin, and it is hard because it's putting so many new technical concepts together that hasn't been excited about the technology. And we're moving to this digital world, particularly in the world of gaming. We see kids spending a lot of money on these in-game items that are digital, and it's harder, I guess, for the older generation to get their head around how something can be digital in an online world. But it's like trying to say to someone in the 90s, well, how much would you pay? What is the internet worth? And what has it allowed everyone to do? It's not really backed by anything other than computers. It's very similar to what Bitcoin is allowing people to do, and what can be built on top of it going forward that I think is going to make it very valuable. I guess the other argument that comes up a lot is how much energy it wastes. A lot of studies have sort of shown that Bitcoin is one of the most renewable industries, around 80%. And all the time it uses the spare capacity at dams and whatnot. So it's not really Bitcoin miners plugged into these coal plants and wasting energy, as people sort of like to say.
Yeah, I know that earlier on there was a lot of noise about that. But as you say, the truth is somewhat different to what people sometimes want to make up about it on that particular point.
I guess finally, I'll just say that I'd never encourage anyone to put in, you know, more than they could afford to lose. This is a new tech industry. It's very risky. A lot of people are saying, well, there's asymmetric upside. I might put 1% of my net worth into Bitcoin, and it's like an option against things going wrong in the financial system, the stock market, the banking system, depending on where you live. A bit of speculation, and at the moment the message that I've been saying since 2012 hasn't really changed, and I think you'd probably agree that talk of negative interest rates and the next financial crisis has come back even just in recent months, and more people are really viewing gold and Bitcoin as a good hedge in their portfolios.
Absolutely. And if people want to know more about Bitcoin, what's the best resources to reach for?
So nuggetsnews.com.au is our website, our YouTube channel. We've got hundreds of videos and plenty of free education if you want to learn more about what is Bitcoin, blockchain, cryptocurrency.
Terrific. Alex, I really appreciate your time today. That's been very helpful. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on, Martin. Cheers, guys.
Thanks. So there you have it. Interesting perspective from Alex there. And as I've said previously, my perspective is there is no single safe option when it comes to holding money or indeed holding assets. There are a whole bunch of different prevailing forces. Look at gold, look at stocks, look at shares, look at bonds, look at Bitcoin. It's important to perhaps spread your risks and not assume that there is some silver bullet. Also, learn more about each of them, because essentially there are pros and cons of many different types of financial assets. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.